fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the June 13th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. The Denver Nuggets defeated the visiting Miami Heat Monday night 94-89 to win their first National Basketball Association championship. The Nuggets won the best of seven NBA Finals 4-1. Nuggets big man Nikola Jokic tallied a team-high 28 points in Game 5, grabbed 16 rebounds, and was named the NBA Finals Most Valuable Player.
It's good. I mean, it's good. We did a job. We did a job. I think we played the best basketball in the postseason, but I think we were there playing the best basketball. You know, today we didn't make shots, but still we defend. And it's a good feeling when you know that you did something that nobody believes, and just it was just us. It's just the organization of Denver Nuggets believing us. Every player believe in each other, and I think that's the most important thing.
Nikola Jokic lifted the NBA trophy and the NBA Finals MVP trophy one day after Novak Djokovic won his record 23rd major singles title at the French Open tennis tournament. Jokic was asked if this is the greatest moment for Serbian athletes.
Well, gotta be. You know, sport is something that is always in Serbia. Was something that put us in front of everybody, even like 10, 20 years ago, whatever. But now when we have a Djokovic who won probably the best ever, for us, he's the best ever, of course. And now we have a NBA championship, and I think it's a really good moment to be a Serbian.
Meanwhile, another Denver star, Jamal Murray, scored 14 points in Game 5 and got quite emotional during the trophy presentation ceremony.
It was really hard to put into words, still is. I couldn't even hold it in. You know, I don't know. I couldn't really hold it in. It was just a surreal moment, and everything was hitting, you know what I'm saying? Like, everything was hitting at once, from the journey to the celebration with the guys to enjoying the moment to looking back on the rehab to looking back as myself as a kid, as the other viewer, you know what I'm saying? Looking from the crowd in or from the camera lens in, and now being able to look back at them, you know what I'm saying? So it was a lot. I couldn't hold it in. It was just something I've been working for my whole life. I think Mike said it, Porter, you know, this is everybody. Every real hooper, you know, wants to be on the stage and playing the game and be in this moment. So to see it full circle, you know, going from my rehab, not being able to walk, go up the stairs, like not just for a month or two, you know what I'm saying? It was for a long time. And a lot of different things going through my head, a lot of tears, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, and real ones. Like I said, just to see it full circle and have total belief in myself, had the team have total belief in me, people back home had total belief in me. That's all I could ever ask for, and just to see it like this is amazing.
Denver's head coach is Michael Malone. At the post-game news conference, he was asked about the journey he's been on with Nikola Jokic to win the NBA title.
It's been amazing, you know, because you can look at it one of two ways. You can look at it from the basketball perspective, two MVPs, finals MVP, world championship, and everything he's done on the court. And then more important for me, you can look at off the court, the relationship, you know, the love that I have for Nikola, his mother and father back in Sombor, Serbia, his brothers Nemanja and Strahina, his wife Natalia and their daughter Ognjena. You know, they're a wonderful family that I've gotten very close to. And I've said this many times before, but Nikola, even tonight, like, he's kind of acting like this was like another game. He's never changed with all the success, and he never will. It's just not in his nature. So, you know, I love Nikola, 8 years. Love Jamal, 7 years. Been through a lot. And just for all of us to stay the course, to challenge ourselves, to get better, collectively, individually. So yeah, it's great to be a part of such a historically great player who's an even better person, and I mean that sincerely. This is not coach talk. Nicole is just a great, great man.
Michael Malone's coaching counterpart for the Miami Heat is Eric Spoelstra.
Now, obviously, we didn't get the final win, but sometimes, you know, that's true in sport and also in life, that you don't always get what you want. But there's no regrets from our side. Everybody, staff, player alike in the locker room, put themselves out there and put themselves into the team, whatever was best for the team. And the tough pill to swallow is it just wasn't good enough. We ran it up against a team that was just better than us in this series. You have to tip your hat to them. That I said it, but they're one hell of a basketball team. They play the right way. They compete. They're well coached, and they have a strong culture. So for this season, they deserve this.
That's Eric Spoelstra, the head coach of the Miami Heat basketball team. Now, Spoelstra has certainly been deserving of the NBA trophy in past years. He was an assistant coach when Miami won the NBA title in 2006, and he was Miami's head coach for back-to-back NBA championships in 2012 and 2013. As I mentioned, this was the first NBA championship for the Denver Nuggets. A little history about the team. Denver was founded in 1967 when it became a member of the now defunct American Basketball Association. I used to love the red, white, and blue basketball the league played with, that is the ABA. The Nuggets joined the NBA in 1976, so it's been a long, long wait, 47 years for the Denver Nuggets in the NBA, almost a half century to win their first NBA title. Congratulations to the Denver Nuggets. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. And you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. You can follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook, Twitter, and at voaafrica.com. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. My Twitter handle is at VOA Sunny Sports. And if you go to voaafrica.com, you can listen online to the Sunny Side of Sports, as well as past episodes. So check out voaafrica.com. Turning to tennis, who is the best ever man to wield a racket? Well, if the answer is based on major titles won, the answer is Novak Djokovic. The Serbian star won his record 23rd Grand Slam singles title Sunday at the French Open in Paris. In the process, he broke a tie with Rafael Nadal, who has 22 major championships, and who looks like he'll be sidelined the rest of the year after hip muscle surgery. Let's listen in now to some of Djokovic's post-match comments in Paris, beginning with this question from a tennis journalist.
Yeah, congratulations. How does it feel to be the greatest male player in history?
Well, thank you. I mean, I don't want to say that I am the greatest because I feel I've said it before, it's a disrespectful towards all the great champions in different eras of our sport. that was played in a completely different way than it is played today. So I feel like each great champion of his own generation has left a huge mark, a legacy, and paved the way for us to be able to play this sport in such a great stage worldwide. So I leave those kind of discussions of who is the greatest to someone else.
Novak Djokovic also paid tribute to Rafa Nadal and Roger Federer, who retired last year with 20 Grand Slam singles titles.
The truth is that I've always, you know, compared myself to these guys because those are the two greatest rivals I ever had in my career. And I've said it before, you know, many times that they have actually defined me as a player, and all the success that I have, you know, they've contributed to it in a way, you know, because of the rivalries and the matchups that we had, and countless hours of thinking and analyzing and what it takes to win against them on the biggest stage, you know, for me and my team. It was just those two guys were occupying my mind for the last 15 years quite a lot, in a professional sense. And so, of course, it's amazing to know that I'm one ahead of both of them in Grand Slams with Rafa. But at the same time, everyone writes their own history. So, you know, I still think that everyone has a unique journey that they should embrace and stick to. But, of course, having the three of us with Andy, of course, as well, that we cannot forget. In the last 20 years, it's kind of reached the golden era of the men's tennis, and as people like to call it. So I'm really grateful to be part of this group of guys.
And where does this 2023 French Open trophy rank in the great career of 36-year-old Novak Djokovic?
One of the biggest ones, of course. I knew that going into the tournament, and I mean going into the match, especially today, that there's history on the line. But I try to, you know, focus my attention and my thoughts into preparing for this match in the best way possible to win like any other match. Of course, I would lie if I say that I didn't think about, you know, the finish line that is right there, and then one more match is needed to win a trophy, a historic one, of course. But my team has created a good bubble around me, so we've I think a great job into just staying in the present moment and performing as good as we wanted to. And of course, when I saw his forehand going wide, I felt a huge relief, and I was overwhelmed with wonderful emotions. And I'm very, very happy and very proud of it.
Meanwhile, the man Novak Djokovic defeated in the French Open final, the Norwegian Casper Ruud, comments on all the records held by Djokovic.
Like I said on court, you know, he holds all the records and these stats that are just ridiculous. So just shows how complete of a player he is. He can win on any surface, anywhere, any balls that we play with. It's he will be up for the challenge. And now it's probably the most significant record that he broke of 23 slams. It's on the male side, that's the record for now, but I'm sure he will aim for even more if I know him, you know, the right way, and he's not done yet, I think.
I agree, Casper. Novak Djokovic is not done yet. I'm sure he'll be considered a big favorite for a 24th major trophy at Wimbledon, where he's won the past four men's singles titles. The 2023 Wimbledon tournament begins on July 3rd.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Rain on me. in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C.
Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight?
Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
Thanks, Larry. That's Larry London, a man who's always ready to cross musical borders.
This is Colonel Sam Amedu, retired President FIBA Africa Zone 3. You are once more listening to Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thank you very much and have a good day.
Colonel Sam Amedu had a good day recently when he was reelected as president of FIBA Africa Zone 3 at the FIBA Africa Congress in Maputo, Mozambique. In an interview with Iron Mike Mbonye, Colonel Sam talked about his reelection.
My reelection as the president of FIBA Africa Zone 3 went very well. I was the only candidate at the end of the day. And all the countries of the zone voted by acclamation. Under our FIBA rules, even if you are the sole candidate, the countries are still expected to endorse by acclamation, which also happened. I was given a standing ovation, which is a confirmation and recognition of the job that I have done. And hopefully we will replicate the same in the next 4 years or more.
Which countries constitute FIBA Africa Zone 3?
There are 8 countries which comprises FIBA Africa Zone 3, and these countries are Nigeria, Benin, Togo, Ghana, Burkina Faso, Cote d'Ivoire, Liberia, and Niger.
What has been the progress made in the zone, especially its impact on the youth?
Our zone has been a very active zone. In the forefront of basketball development, countries like Nigeria and Cote d'Ivoire have very senior national teams. Youth teams from the zone have been doing very, very, very well. Moreover, our zone, what we have been doing so far to impact the youth is to build infrastructure for the youths, so that the youth can have opportunity to develop their skills. And so that's what we have been doing. There are competitions. Most of we have been organizing camps, basketball camps. FIBA organizes the FIBA youth camps. And also the zone complements that by organizing, in conjunction with the Jordan Wora Foundation, the Jordan Wora Foundation Elite Basketball Camp, which we have held for the past 3 years. So many competitions. Our youth take part in 3 or 3 tournaments, as well as a lot of the youth play for the clubs. You recollect that ABC of Abidjan was in Bal. They got all the way to the quarter full finals, and so on. There are so many activities that benefit the youth. Yeah, so we hope that coming of the next 4 years, we will consolidate on those things, and then we'll be able to put the national federations in a pedestal that will make them be self-sufficient.
What next for FIBA Africa Zone 3? Any special events or programs scheduled for the zone later in the year?
So talking about the next 4 years, we hope to bring in new innovations. We are looking at a zonal club championship. And there's going to be a special competition for the zones. Then we are going to increase the pace of the youth competitions. And more so, we are going to organize more clinics and training for our technical officials. Overall, FIBA Africa Zone 3 will be on a better pedestal the next 4 years than what we have done in the past.
That's Colonel Sam Amedu, retired, who was recently reelected as president of FIBA Africa Zone 3. And Colonel Sam spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Maputo, Mozambique.
Sporty greetings. This is Liz Mills, head coach of Abidjan Basketball Club of Cote d'Ivoire. You are listening to Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.
South African football is mourning the death of Clive Barker, the charismatic coach who guided Bafana Bafana to the 1996 Africa Cup of Nations title on home soil. Barker died June 10th at the age of 78 after being diagnosed with Lewy body dementia. Myron Nyka filed this Clive Barker tribute from Durban, South Africa.
It is a sad time indeed for football fans from around the country and continent. Barker is hailed as a hero for his nation-building efforts as South Africa entered democracy. Born and raised in Durban, Barker played for clubs like Durban City and Durban United before a knee injury curtailed his career. He swiftly moved on to coaching, earning immediate success. He won titles at club level before landing the role of coach of Bafana Bafana. When South Africa hosted AFCON 1996, former President Nelson Mandela made a humble appeal to Barker, as former National and Columbus Crew player Dr. Khumalo shared on South African television.
I'm not the only individual that he shaped. He shaped the whole country. He put a smile to all South Africans. So what he has done, it's a message that we was given by the former president, may his soul rest in peace, Madiba. Clive, unite the nation. Because the rugby guys have done it. It's your turn. And it's exactly what he did. This man told us in 95 that he's going to win 96 AFCON, that he's going to qualify for France 98. And it's exactly what happened. May his soul rest in peace. We've lost a hero. We have lost a father. A mentor.
South Africa beat Tunisia 2-0, sparking euphoria around the country. Barker's famous airplane celebrations on the touchline was a reflection of his bubbly character. His nephew, Steve Barker, now the coach of top-flight South African club Stellenbosch FC, fondly remembers his late uncle.
My fondest memory, I think like all South Africans, continues to remain when we won the AFCON and the celebration that Clive done. I think it just showed exactly who he was, and the joy that he showed that day, I think, will last in our memories forever. You know, he was very player-centered. You know, he wanted players to enjoy the game. He made them feel, you know, like they owned the game. He made them feel special. He took care of the person. And I think he just wanted players to go out and express themselves and gave them real confidence and real belief in themselves.
After winning AFCON, Barker's next target was to qualify South Africa for the FIFA World Cup in 1998. That he did. But then a poor run of results saw him sacked before the tournament got underway in France. Neil Tovey, who captained South Africa's AFCON winning team, shared insight on his approach.
He was unique to South African football in his way he coached the team. He made the team feel very, very, very welcome. And he was a player's coach. They loved to come to training and they loved to play the game. And that ultimately made such a happy camp.
Tovey said Barker's man management skills were second to none. Post-1996, a number of his players landed top deals in Europe. In fact, Barker remains the only national coach to pick a team of completely overseas-based South African footballers.
Whatever he touched turned to gold. Very, very unique man, which had loads and loads of time and brought the best about in each individual in whatever they were very, very good at. He didn't ask Dr. Khumalo to tackle like Linda Buthelezi or for Linda Buthelezi to dribble like Dr. Khumalo. He made them feel special in their own right. and in their own quality. And that was a very, very unique talent that brought the blend of that 1996 team together. And it was a complete travesty of justice when he didn't take the team to the 1998 World Cup.
Tributes from around the world have poured in for Barker, who remains South Africa's most successful coach. He'll be laid to rest this week. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Myron Nyker in Durban, South Africa.
Thanks, Myron. From Durban, let's go to Cape Town, South Africa, where Vicky Stark tells us about a women's grassroots basketball program.
23-year-old Shanice Goliath earns a living coaching basketball. She's having a bit of fun with friends and family before heading off to coach in the upmarket suburb of Sea Point. Goliath says she decided to coach 6 years ago after being selected by African Grassroots Hoops to go to Washington, where she and 10 other young women ages 13 to 21 participated in a leadership program funded by the U.S. State Department.
We had this, we would go to workshops and stuff, and then they said, like, what do you want to do when you get back? Like, what are you going to give back to the community? So I decided I want to start coaching.
She grew up in Haderveld, a rough neighborhood in Cape Town, South Africa, where gangsterism and drugs are rife.
And being inside the basketball hall, it always, like, takes everything away from, like, whatever's going on outside. That's like a blockage for me. It just takes me away. It's like my happy place, basically.
You have no balance. You can't finish a shot.
Sibongile Sopile, 19, is also a product of the African Grassroots Hoops coaching program for girls and young women. She says her mission is to help kids see that basketball can change their lives.
The friends that I grew up with, most of them are pregnant. Some of them are dropped out. They dropped out of school. Some of them, they've been in prison and came back. So I was like, okay, I'm the only person who's doing the right thing here. So I need to be an example to my friends.
African Grassroots Hoops was started in 2014 by South African Vincent Ntunja, the assistant coach of the Cape Town Tigers of the Basketball Africa League, and American Giovanni Freeman.
We decided if we can develop you as a leader, then it would go way beyond the basketball. So basically what we're doing is we're giving them a support system. We're doing everything we can to open their eyes to a bigger world and opportunity in the basketball world and beyond.
He says basketball on the continent is growing, bringing many opportunities. The group will be hosting the Youth Day Classic basketball tournament at the prestigious Cape Town International Convention Center in June. Some of the young women will be coaching and others working as project managers. Vicky Stark for VOA News, Cape Town, South Africa.
The June 13th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.